Wake Up with Finch and Kane is live on WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And we're live here on Connoisseur Media, and I want to thank you all for tuning in. Thanks to Connoisseur Media for giving us this sort of a democratic response every Sunday morning from 10 to 11. And if you're tired of being manipulated, if you're tired of a president who divides us, if you're tired of masked men taking people off in the middle of the night, if you're tired of billionaires and bullies jiggering up our environmental agenda and telling us that climate change is a hoax, well, you're in the right place, because we're here to talk about waking up to the oligarchy that surrounds us, waking up to the fiasco that is this president. By the way, did you know that all Somalis are garbage? I never knew that. That has really puzzled me, that a whole nation of people could be garbage. I met some people that from Somalia. Joe McGee, my guest, Gary Hale, my head kibitzer are here this morning. Have you ever met a Somali that was garbage?
No. Nope, but that's what they used to say about the Irish in the 1860s and 70s.
Yeah, exactly, right? And they went after our ancestors, and they were the second largest group to fight in the Civil War, one of the largest groups in the Revolutionary War. And the irony is, you know, all this emphasis on, I was reading the other day that there were whole regiments at Gettysburg of German-speaking only troops. They had fled the oligarchies of Germany and came here to fight for an idea. And they didn't speak English. And they weren't American citizens. And they were in our uniform trying to preserve our democracy that's being challenged still to this day by racist forces that used race to divide us at the Civil War and are using race to divide us still again. And it's amazing. It's history repeating itself, right, Gary?
That's right. You know, Joe's point about what they said about the Irish. My oldest daughter discovered on Ancestry two or three months ago that I have a great-great-great-grandfather who came from Ireland, had already served in the British Army, and at age of 42, joined the Union Army to fight against slavery for Abraham Lincoln. And so, you know, calling any group of people, Irish or Somalis or whomever, garbage is just very wrong.
It's un-Muslim, it's un-Christian, it's un-American, it's un-European, it's unhuman. It's inhuman to do such a thing. And to do it with such relish and such happiness. He seems so happy calling a whole country of people garbage. And in fact, if anybody has any doubts, garbage is the stuff that's under the sink in the white bag that you take out to the back porch into the refuse container. Humans are the people that put the things in the container. So it's not to be confused. We can't be confused here. The one is garbage, one is humans. And yet we have a president who relishes in tearing the people's house down, literally and figuratively. He tore a huge chunk of the White House down. How do you wake up in the morning and think that that's okay? And did you see, I know you probably saw on Facebook and others, where people would say, oh my goodness, Barack Obama spent $400 million on an indoor basketball court. Doesn't exist, but they believe it. It's like the pizza restaurant selling children into sex slaves, and they believe that. How do people believe this crap? That's why we have Wake Up every Sunday morning from 10 to 11 with people like Gary Hale and Joe McGee. Now, we were going to have to take a break. Unfortunately, our first break comes pretty quick. But before the show, these two gentlemen, you know, love it or hate it, the income tax has saved Connecticut's bacon for about the last 30 or 40 years. And it was very controversial. It's been very successful. Ned Lamont, with his great financial prudence, has really put the state on the right track, salting a lot of this away. We've created something that I'd love to get your ideas on. I think it's a miracle. We're taking $300 million a year and putting it in an endowment for one of the most critical investments we can make in early childhood education. Joe, I mean, you helped get the income tax through. Did you ever think it would do such wonderful things?
Well, something had to happen because the state was going down the drain. It was broke, and I give Weicker a lot of credit. Mm. And the view at the time was that the income tax was going to destroy the Connecticut economy.
It and Weicker and Lamont were good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, I met the governor when he was working with Weicker. No, the income tax has really benefited Connecticut. People still think, oh, my God, the Connecticut economy never recovered from the income tax. That just isn't true. That just isn't true.
Yeah.
If you look at our gross state product, it's grown every year up until the big recession.
Would you rather live anyplace else? I mean, really, think about it. Some of these knuckleheads talking about how terrible Connecticut is, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, I like Connecticut.
You can live in Arkansas. You can live in Connecticut. Where would you live?
I love Connecticut.
Yeah, me too. All three of us are big, big nutmeggers.
Well, if you want to send your kids to school, there's few states, maybe Massachusetts, you can argue there. God forbid you get sick. I mean, you've been through your struggles, Bill. All of us have health ailments time to time. Where would you rather be than in Connecticut with a great hospital system, great medical health care system?
Anywhere in the world, there's no place better than Boston to New York corridor to stay healthy.
Yeah. That's right. And there's all
the smartest
opportunities for learning, even when you're not in school, museums.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's just a very interesting place. It's not a long strip mall. It's just a great place to live and learn and grow.
And so McGee from Fairfield, you're now in Hamden, but you're in Ansonia, boy. We have all working class roots. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Finch and Kane. WICC 600 and 95.9. The voice of Connecticut.
Well, that was it.
And we're back with Wake Up every Sunday morning on Connoisseur Media. We're on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Joining us live from Washington, D.C. is our man in Washington, Brett Roaster. How are you this morning, Brett?
Mayor, I'm doing great. How about you?
We're doing great. I've got Gary Hale and Joe McGee, two of your best buds up here in Connecticut. But we're all dying to find out.
Oh, Gary and Joe, great.
How come Trump's in trouble with his guy in Tennessee trouncing the Democrat by 9%? Explain that to our listeners. Why is that bad news for Trump and MAGA, and why is it good news for the Democrats?
Yeah, look, we're talking about a special election where there was a 13-point swing for Republicans in a very safe Republican district, and that took place in 12 months. I mean, that's not a trend, that's a wave.
Yeah.
The Republicans spent $6.5 million to win a safe seat by 9 points. I mean,
holy cow. Did you guys know they spent that much money?
No.
$6.5 million. When I ran for Congress, my mother was my treasurer, and we spent $185,000 a few years ago. And Chris Shea spent $3 million, and I spent $185,000. Hey, we got almost 40% of the vote on 100. That was the most economical campaign I ever ran per vote, dollars per vote. That's an amazing statistic, though, Brett. Tell us more.
Yes, I mean, look, when you're spending millions of dollars to hold seats you won by 20 points just 1 year ago, I mean, you're not on offense. You're in damage control.
He's going to have to sell a lot more graft.
Dealing with right now.
He's going to have to build a lot more ballrooms with graft attached to it for him to get that kind of money into the Republican coffers. What else can he build? Yeah, an arch? You build an arch with private money and get those people to pony up money? He could listen to pardons. Jesus, he could pardon a few more drug kingpins and tell them to go off and raise some money. Corruption, corruption, corruption. But tell us more about this seat. Who's the guy going in?
So Afton Ben was the Democrat, the Trump-backed candidate who won. You know, it's not even important at this point, right?
Right.
We're talking about proxy
battle.
Another backbencher in the Republican caucus, but it's not looking very good for Republicans overall heading into the 2026 midterms.
Well, that's what we want to hear more about. And just our listeners, a heads up. After the first of the year, Brett will be joining us with a little lightning round at the beginning of every show as to how the House Democrats will come back into the majority by going seat by seat and then telling you how to get to their website and how to volunteer and how to get involved in these campaigns. We know that turnout is so important. Joe, Gary, you've been involved in many campaigns. Joe, tell us about turnout in these kind of races. Why is it so important?
Well, it's critical. I mean, you know, just in these local elections that we just had, if you take the
turnout was amazing in most of the suburbs.
Yes, 40, 50%. That's very unusual. Usually it's down around 30%, 6%, somewhere in there. But let's say the town of Fairfield. I mean, it just was a Democratic sweep. So that's really telling you. And this is a town that's fairly split between Republicans.
Pretty purple.
And, yeah. And overwhelmingly Democratic. So in the midterm elections coming up, Republicans are really facing very, very strong headwinds.
Unless they were having some gumption and stand up to Trump, right? That helps them at the polls.
But so far they haven't been willing to do that.
Yeah.
They're afraid of Trump.
Yeah.
And the funny part is when you finally call the king on you know, you take the king on.
Yeah.
You got to make sure you kill him, so to speak.
Yeah.
You got to beat him.
Yeah.
They're unwilling to take him on because he really punishes them.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing to me how much chapped lips there are in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yeah.
And it's sad to watch because the Republican Party is going to pay a huge price for this.
Now, people don't know this if they're listening, but Joe McGee had a bird's eye view to the last major authoritarian putsch by a president when Richard Nixon basically disregarded the Constitution and the law to try to grab power and use the federal government's agencies to spy on Americans and to play dirty tricks on Americans and to plant dirt on them. And it was his boss at the time, United States Senator Lowell Weicker, who did what, Joe?
Well, at that time, I was working for Stuart McKinney House,
right, yeah.
But Weicker was the senator.
But we were Weicker-likers, you
yeah,
and I.
We, yeah. I mean, Weicker took him on. He stood up. And so did the Republican establishment. It got to the point where it was the Republican establishment who took on a Republican president and told him, it's over.
And Gary could tell us who those senators were that went to the White House, Republican senators. Remember who they were, Gary?
Barry Goldwater from Arizona. John Rhodes, I believe, was the House Minority Leader.
Hugh Scott.
From Arizona. Hugh Scott.
Arch conservative from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they went to the White House, if I remember it correctly, and told President Nixon that
the jig was up.
A trial in the Senate, he would be convicted.
Yeah, yeah.
And Richardson, who was the Attorney General, about the difference today.
Yeah.
He took on the president and said, we will resign if you pursue this.
Yeah.
There's no one in the Republican Party who has that kind of gumption today in Washington.
Now, gumption is something that we celebrate on this day, December 7th, 1941, when Franklin Roosevelt, the great president, Franklin Roosevelt, went before the Congress and said that we've been attacked. We've been attacked by a fascist authoritarian regime that was ruled by an emperor. And it was in league with a fascist in Germany. I started, Gary's father was a tail gunner, right?
Nose gunner.
Nose gunner on a B-17?
B-24.
I'm close. It was an airplane. And signed up for an extra round after his 25 tours. My dad's ship was sunk at D-Day. Joe, I know that you have family members that were involved in the struggle against fascism. We are an Antifa country. We are an anti-fascist country. And yet Antifa now has been used to gaslight those of us who are for freedom and against fascism. How's that happen, Joe?
Yeah, that's a good question because it's a worldwide phenomenon. It just isn't happening in the U.S. I mean, you see it in Europe as well. I don't know. There's a loss of confidence somehow in the American system. People don't feel they have a fair deal.
They get on their phone and everything comes to them instantly.
Yeah.
Amazon drops something in their package. They don't have to talk to anybody. It comes instantly. Why can't the government work like that? Well, democracy means you have to look people in the eye like we are in the studio, three of us here.
But, Bill, I'll tell you, I think a lot of people today feel they have a raw deal in America.
Oh, sure. Well, they do.
The data is showing that. The wealthy, their income is dramatically increased. And if you're middle class or working class, it's a struggle. And that system, economic system, is under tremendous pressure. And I really, you look at the billionaire class, they have a price to pay for what they've done.
Oh, my goodness.
The greed is outrageous. The control of the political system with the use of their money has created a two-tiered system.
Yeah.
And that's something that is just not American.
So anti-democratic to
have an oligarchy. And that's the basis. If you look at Trump, the populist on the right, you look at Bernie, the populist on the left.
They're saying a lot of the same things.
Yeah, they're saying a lot of the same things. There's a real profound sense this system isn't working for
everybody.
Except
one behind the scenes is helping the billionaires.
Well, one is a certain authenticity.
More billionary.
Yeah, there's an authenticity to Bernie.
Oh, yeah.
To Trump, I mean, it's like
a show. Did we all make a mistake by supporting Hillary and not Bernie?
I thought Bernie was the most intelligent person I've seen in politics in the last 20 years. I have to say, I really did.
And this is from a lifelong Republican.
Yeah.
Joe McGee, Gary Hale, and I, lifelong Democrats. But, you know, I have to say, again, at the bottom of the hour, we've got to go to news. But when I was in the Senate, Gary, when you were in the Senate, Joe, when you worked for Weicker, and when you worked for McKinney, a wonderful, wonderful human being, Stuart McKinney was, he was just so genuine and so caring.
Yeah, I'm a good guy.
Yeah, and then I had the you know, you don't like to see, you know, inherited things in politics, but I think John McKinney, his son, earned it on all on his own and had many of the same qualities of his father that made him endearing. So I'd like to get John on the show at some point to talk about how hard it is to be a Democrat. I mean, to be a Republican, it can be hard to be a Democrat, too, you know, depending on the candidates we put up. You know, I lost to somebody I wasn't too fond of. But anyway, we'll get beyond that. But it's hard to be a Republican when you see fiscal conservatism out the window, longstanding aversion to foreign entanglements of the Republican Party. I always loved having the contretemps to my thinking. Because I knew, well, I was passionate about what I believed in, but, you know, you go to sleep at night, was I really right, you know? And well, the Republicans helped to make my ideas better.
Well, the Trump Party today is not the Republican Party. I mean, it's a creation of Donald Trump.
Yeah, and so much hate.
Yeah, and it builds on divisiveness. It makes, there's always an enemy. There's always someone who's out to get you.
Yeah.
That was not the Republican Party that I grew up with.
No.
But it began to shift. The Republican Party started shifting rightward and more rightward, and you end up with a Donald Trump.
Well, I think the Willie Horton ad was a salient point, wasn't it, Gare?
I think so, but to take Joe's point, I think there were two moments in Democratic administrations that fed into that.
I guess one is Obama not going after
the
bankers.
Well, the first, I think, was Bill Clinton, who I think was a very good president.
NAFTA.
Trade deals.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Ansonia. The factories that were, you know, my paper route was right adjacent to it, the factories and the bars and the working class homes. And NAFTA, where Ross Perot, you know, made some points that were valid about exporting American jobs. So that was number one. And number two, years later, I mean, listen, if Obama ran today, if he was eligible for a third term, I'd vote for him.
Yeah.
But Eric Holder never prosecuted one Wall Street banker who helped blow up the American economy.
They made sure they got their
bonuses. They got their golden
exits.
After
they destroyed our nation's economy, they got a bonus.
Foreclosures.
It's like pardoning a drug lord.
So it was in many respects a betrayal of Roosevelt's working class coalition that built the Democratic Party.
And Roosevelt's on our mind today, but we have to take a break. Gare, sorry to interrupt you. You were on a roll. We're going to come right back after the news and weather and a few ads from our sponsors. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Don't worry if you slept in. You're just in time for Wake Up with Finch and Kane. Now, on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC 600 and 95.9.
So, just to report on our disabled list here at the Wake Up Show every Sunday, Melissa Kane is home recovering from hip surgery, and we wish her all the best in a speedy recovery. It doesn't seem the same without her. We have the friendly banter back and forth on all of our shows, and hopefully next week or the following week she'll be in with a brand new hip running around the studio. And then Victoria Woodard, who previews our banned books, usually from the right-wing cuckoo birds, banning books and telling you what is the right age for your child to read a book, she had shoulder surgery, and she's going to be out of commission for a couple weeks. So you're stuck with me. Luckily, I have great guests like Joe McGee, former Commissioner of Economic Development for the state of Connecticut, former staff for Stuart McKinney, Congressman from the 4th District, former friend of Lowell Weicker, friend of Governor Lamont, is sort of a silent whisperer behind the scenes to Governor Lamont. So, you know, he won't take credit for it, but I think some of the great successes of Ned Lamont have Joe McGee's input written all over them.
No.
Don't be humble. And, of course, Brett Brosder in Washington, who tells us why a 9% loss was a huge disaster for Donald Trump. And, you know, Joe, you often would comment on the elections, the local elections on Channel 12.
I did for 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah.
And I was hoping you did it this year because it was a tsunami. I've never saw anything like this in my 50-something years in politics, yeah. and you haven't either, where so many towns, because they're sick and tired of the things we're sick and tired about on the show, being yep. divided and seeing the rich get richer and no justice and pardoning terrible criminals who then go out and raise money for the president, tearing the White House down. We're all upset about these things. But did you ever see anything like what we saw on November 2nd?
No. I mean, Trump has really damaged the Republican Party in Connecticut.
Oh, yeah.
And what you're seeing
poor
is
Ben Proto,
average
huh?
good people. They're just not going to put up with the lack of civility, the racist rhetoric.
Yeah.
It's beneath a president. It's something a parent doesn't want to do with their child.
Right.
So how can you have this guy in the White House talking this way? What's the message to children? This is disgraceful. And you see in Republican towns an overwhelming shift to Democrats. Whether it lasts forever, it's going to last as long as Donald Trump is in the White House because people don't want this.
So you, as a lifelong Republican, I really want to get you to open up just a little bit about how you feel about this. I mean, you and I go back 40 years,
yeah,
scraping paint on my historic home in the south end of Bridgeport.
Right. Right.
Our first kids were born, I think, the same year.
Yeah.
We celebrate our political involvement. We celebrate
yeah.
our differences and
right.
how you made me grow when I was mayor. When I was state senator, I relied on people like you and John McKinney, who were dear friends, who saw things a little differently. I would say to John, you're just too big a baby to raise taxes. I had to leave it up to me. We agree on all the problems and on all the solutions, but you don't want to raise any money for it. And he would kind of, we'd have another beer and joke about it. It would, but that's the only difference that there might have been. We saw problems. We wanted to fix them. We felt public-spirited. Tell me how you feel right now to see that being lost.
Well, I'm embarrassed of the Republican Party, and I think it's very hard for most Republican elected officials basically to figure out how to deal with a guy in the White House and how to be a Republican.
Yeah.
This is not the Republican Party I joined when I first was in college. And, I mean,
you had some giants.
Yeah.
The Republican Party at the time.
I was attracted to a more moderate wing of the Republican Party.
The ones that got stuff done.
Yeah. I mean, McKinney, Weicker, these were the moderate Republicans. And so they really believed that.
Later on, Christopher Shays, who
yeah,
we
Christopher
should
Shays,
send
yeah.
our condolences out to Chris, who yeah, just Chris, lost his wife, Betsy.
Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But they were a powerful group of people in Washington. But they began to grow a much more conservative movement within the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And Trump basically captured that, but he also captured this almost nativist fear of the other,
yeah,
of immigrants, of people who are different.
Right.
And he melded these two together, built around a whole agenda of resentment.
Yeah.
And it's been powerful. And that has really troubled me. I've not been able to figure out. It's so clear to me that so much of what Trump does is just unacceptable. How do people buy into it? And then I began to realize, as I listened to people who are Trump backers, they really are responding to something more than Trump. They're feeling they have a bad deal.
Yeah.
There's something.
No one's listening to them.
No one's listening to them. The values.
And they're not, by the way.
Well, but the values they grew up with are changing. You know, the world is changing and they're feeling threatened.
Yeah.
And also the other issue is America is going from a white nation to a nation of more than one color.
Yeah.
And we'll be in the minority. Whites will be in the minority in another 10 or 15 years.
Sure.
And I think this has created a concern. I think
good for the restaurant business. We get so many better restaurants.
We got great restaurants.
The Irish restaurants were never that good.
No, the Irish, nothing against mom, but woof.
Yeah.
The Italian mothers, though, they could cook.
Yeah. Well, that's why the Irish married Italians.
But
they wanted to survive on better nutrition.
I think the bottom line
mom,
is...
Mom, if you're listening up in heaven, I love your cooking. Meatloaf especially was your forte.
But let me just give you one thing. I think where the Republicans do have something, the debt in America today is over the top.
Yeah, Americans
and,
national
Yes.
Yeah.
And this is going to have to be an issue in the future.
Yeah.
Because we're spending our future. The amount of money that's being spent is not sustainable.
And, you know, you talked about getting things done, being sustainable, compromise. you know, if you look at Social Security, why is it that we just tax the first 180,000 or whatever it is? I forget, 150,000. There's no progressivity to putting salting money aside. If a billionaire has to be putting money aside on some money that they won't get in the future, okay, that's just too bad. Maybe they'll have to cancel their Sports Illustrated subscription or something, you know? It's not going to affect them. And yet the Republican Party has this wall about progressivity. Progressivity just means you take from people when they can give it, not when they can't. That's all progressivity means. And it seems to me that we could fix Social Security pretty easily if we just up the amount of money that's being salted away for the future.
We Republicans have a fear of you Democrats, that as you grow these programs, you get committed to these programs and they don't ever change.
You're committed to Social Security.
I am.
Gary Hale's committed to Social Security.
Yes.
John Larson, our hero of Social Security, is committed to Social Security. John, good luck in your election. But, you know, that's something that we used to be able to come together about, Social Security. I get a check now. I'm not feeling like I'm going to fall into debt if I get sick because I have health care and have Social Security. That's a great safety net we should all agree on, no? Why can't we get Republicans to buy into more progressivity? I understand the fear. You know, I think that the check and balance of the Republicans and Democrats, if we could get back to that, we're not at that. We're at a place we don't even recognize.
It's easier to run political campaigns to get elected on negativity than positive.
Yeah.
And that's part of this problem. We run against Congress. We run against the system. We run it. And so the question is, what are we for now?
Yeah.
And that has been lost. Even the Democratic Party bill, I don't think has been particularly good.
No.
In terms of who are they for?
No.
They have gotten, like, they're more like kind
try
of the
to run
academic.
In Connecticut with the Democrats on property tax reform.
Yeah. So there's a lot of fault on
both
sides.
Both Democrats live in the suburbs, and they're not interested in property tax reform.
Correct.
You know? Getting back, I want to just say the other night I was at dinner, a big Italian dinner for the Knights of Columbus for families that don't have gifts. And it was David Pia from Trumbull and David Ritigliano from Trumbull. And we have lots of disagreements. We don't agree on much of anything these days. But what we do agree on is civility.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We had a wonderful time. We raised money for 13 families through the Knights that weren't going to have Christmas. And one of the things you said is, how do they focus being a Republican? One of the things I've seen, hats off to Dave Ritigliano, he's on Reg's Review. He's also on committee that I go to all the time. I can't remember the name of it.
General Law.
Yeah, General Law. Thank you, Brett. Got a guy in Washington had to remind me what committee I go to all the time. But without a good staff, I was lost, you know. He focuses like a hawk on the meat and potatoes of the issue, not from a partisan standpoint, but from a good government standpoint.
Right.
And I think he flourishes that way, and he's able to find issues like he supports our building trades, and he's able to find ways to keep himself sane in a political environment that will drive you nuts. If you watch MS Now or Fox, either side, you're going to end up going nuts, aren't you?
Yeah, well, they've become just caricatures.
They're not even news, look, right? They list themselves as entertainment now?
If you're going to be a political leader and run for office, what's going to be your platform? You've got to figure out what are people concerned about. You've got to listen to people, and then you've got to build an agenda that meets their needs. I don't think either party lately has done very well at that. Look, let's just look at Biden on immigration. He let that immigration thing get out of control. I mean, immigrants coming across the border hit 1.8 million people a year. I mean, this is nuts.
Yeah.
So what happened? His lack of dealing with that issue then triggers this enormously
backlash
with Trump. And people go, oh, finally someone took care of it.
Yeah.
So the failure of the Democratic Party of Biden to fix the border issue has led to this disastrous policy with Trump.
And I think Gary and I would echo those and also list about another half a dozen limousine liberal elitist, what'd you call them, faculty lounge kind of values that have sucked the lifeblood out of, you know, we talked about Mamdani. Mamdani ran on cheap buses, cheap doctors, cheap food, and cheap apartments. Franklin Roosevelt, who we're, you know, giving accolades to today, that was him. And that the Democratic Party's ascendancy was largely due to the fact that people like Hale and I and you got involved in politics and bought into that. You from a Republican side, right. Us from a Democratic side. Who's right. buying into that today, Joe?
Well, that's the question. Look, let's just look at education. I'm doing a program at Fairfield University right now on leadership, and some with students who are sophomores. I'm amazed the amount of debt these kids have. That tuition to go to Fairfield University a year is $60,000. Even if you get financial aid, you're coming out of there after 4 years with $100,000 to $150,000 in debt.
Right.
How do we build a society?
My first house that you helped me fix.
Yeah, probably cost less than
$16,000. I paid for the house.
Exactly. My college tuition when I was in college was $1,500. So here's the point.
What was your debt?
I had zero debt. I worked. In the summers. I worked.
God bless you.
Now here's the issue I want to raise. How do you build a society where only 36% of Americans go to college? I don't think people realize that. Even in Connecticut, one of the most educated states in the nation, it's less than 40% go to college.
Bridgeport only has one neighborhood with over 30% college educated. That's Black Rock.
Right.
Brooklawn has 18%.
Right.
So the rest of them are in single digits.
Right. So I'm the
There's no opportunity.
I'm the children of immigrants, and they made sure my brother and sister and I went to college.
Yeah.
We were told, you're going to college, and you figured it out.
Right.
That dream is shifting away from people.
Well, I'm
today.
Just going to add and or the building trades, because plumbing and electrical is very college-like, and it's free tuition, guys. So you call the union hall, we'll set you up.
Go ahead. Those jobs. Hey, listen, being an electrician today is like, you know, man, that's a hell of a job. It's a great job.
Or a plumber, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not
or
saying,
an operating engineer.
I'm not saying everybody has to go to college, but what I'm saying is the American dream that our parents had after World War II is to continue your education, build a career.
Yeah.
People don't feel that's possible today. A huge number of people don't feel that's possible, and that's extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Because then it gives rise to people like Trump who exploit that, and that's what he is, an exploiter.
Yeah, yeah, who tears the White House down.
A very clever exploiter, but that's what he's doing.
How does he get away with tearing the White House down? That blows my mind. Every single historical act in modern American history in the White House occurred in the East Room. He tore it down. Pablo Casals playing the cello to celebrate the arts with Jacqueline Kennedy. Abraham Lincoln welcoming in Frederick Douglass when the guards were trying to keep the black man out of his inaugural party, yelling across the East Room, "That's my friend. Frederick Douglass, let him in."
Because people are numb. Trump's assault on America has numbed people to what's going on here.
Yeah. I mean, every single person that went to the White House as a citizen of the United States to see the people's house, to see where the president, at our permission, lives upstairs. And we have the first floor for parties and for gatherings and for diplomatic events. And, right? We all went through the East Room. We all went there many times. And the portraits of the modern presidents were there.
But he's putting his mark on the White House. He sees himself in his own mind as
like a dog
the dominant,
peeing on a tree.
I am the greatest president. This White House reflects my values. So what are his values? Gold.
Yeah.
Big buildings.
Yeah.
I mean, it's classless.
Hoarding top secret documents for resale.
The lack of class is striking.
Yeah.
But that's what he's doing. I think people are so numb to all this, they don't even know what to make of it.
Yeah. So, Joe, you're still a registered Republican. It's not easy.
You didn't ask me if I've been voting Republican, though.
And I know you haven't been because you've confessed that. You know, we're three Irish guys here. We give each other confession.
It's hard to give up my childhood commitment to something.
But I admire you for it because... You had a value system that was based on your membership in what you perceived to be a very moderate and idealistic Republican Party.
Right.
And it no longer exists. And MAGA is now splitting. So tell me what the impact, maybe Gary and Brett, you want to chime in on this. We have about 6 or 7 minutes left.
I think the Republican Party comes back. I think after Trump, I think it's going to be devastating to the Republican Party. There is going to be an internal war in for the future of the Republican Party, and it may split apart completely. But once Trump goes, no one can hold this together like Trump did.
Yeah.
So there is, in my mind, an opportunity.
Speaker Johnson couldn't do it.
Not a chance. I know. The guy's an idiot.
So he's
at the end
weenie.
Of the day, weak. Talk about weak. Oh,
yeah.
My God. At the end of the day, there's a coming struggle within the Republican Party. And I think that's what I want to be. What is the future of this Republican Party?
What is it?
Well, I think it's looking back to what was successful in the past.
Sure.
I think strong national...
Fixing immigration, fixing social immigration, security, fixing the national debt.
Making government work, making the programs that we have approved of work for the American people.
It is kind of a little playbook out of Lamont's playbook. Getting state finances under control.
Lamont reminds me of a moderate Republican, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very balanced, very balanced.
Some of our, you know, chagrin sometimes, but
it's... Well, you progressives go freak out all the time over anything, but he's a good, balanced man.
Gary, did you hear what he just said?
I'm not sure Ned's going to thank Joe for that compliment.
You're going into a Democratic primary.
I'm fascinated by Joe's analysis of it, but I also think the opportunity is in the Democratic Party, but the elitists who run it, at
they
the national level, will screw it up.
Yeah.
Because all they have to do, instead of all their demographic analyses, and I respect all of that stuff, just go read a book or two about how Roosevelt did it.
Yeah.
If they could carve out 25% of working people that have migrated over and bring them back, Republicans have no chance.
No chance. Correct. Yeah. Because what the Republicans always were as the contra-Trump was the reasonable balance to our energy to solve every problem we've ever met. And as I get older, I realize there's some problems that are pretty intractable. We're not going to change the property tax system in Connecticut. It will always screw working people. It will, because there's just too many voters who turn out to vote and too many voters who don't turn out to vote. Now, we may be able to marginally around the edge, but the point is we need to have both a conservatism and a liberalism that fight it out in the public realm. We need to have that. The town
Bill,
green doesn't survive.
This is the challenge for the Democrats. I think there's got to be a frank conversation in the Democratic Party about respecting traditional values.
Yes.
Because what has happened is the Reagan Democrats began to move away because they didn't think their values were respected.
That's right.
And they were ridiculed.
Well, they may not have been.
And they were not, because we know there was an elitist crowd, a lot of it academically based, that began to have a certain viewpoint in the Democratic Party. I think that's been devastating to the Democrats. Bring back the Reagan Democrats. If they return to the Democratic Party, the Republicans don't have a chance.
Ironically, Mamdani's the one voice that we have right now who's saying, come back to your working class roots.
Correct.
And they put him in as this radical.
But you call him a socialist. He's not a socialist.
No.
Who's put him in as the radical?
Who's put him as the radical?
The media.
The media
and the Republicans.
Democratic leaders who listen to the consultants. And
correct.
The consultants couldn't have won against Alf Landon. They couldn't win twice
against
Trump.
I agree with Gary completely. I think the Democratic Party has kind of lost its way.
Yeah.
It's historic roots that my parents joined as Irish.
Yeah.
We were raised, right?
Yeah.
My rebellion against my parents was not to be a Democrat, but a Republican.
Yeah, right.
Because all kids want to go against their parents, right? But the point is
we've been trying to get you ever since. I know you're close, but you know.
But the point is the Democratic Party has got to go back to those roots, that people of traditional values don't feel ridiculed. And a lot of Trump's base feels that way.
Sure.
That they've been made fun of.
Listen, Gary and I, you can't find more loyal Democrats than Gary. And we've just been told that we got to take a commercial break. We were a break short. That's my bad. I was asleep at the switch. We'll be right back after these messages to do a nice goodbye. Listening to another edition of Wake Up with Melissa Kane and Bill Finch. All the best to Melissa, who's recuperating. All the best to Victoria Woodard, our banned book expert, who's recuperating. We'll be back next week with a full wake-up show with guests hopefully as entertaining as Gary Hale, Brett Brosner, and Joe McGee. I enjoyed the show immensely, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We just said that America needs conversations like this, so we'll have to do it again. Thank you so much, and we'll listen to YouTube on the way out the door here. Thank you.